It's now time for the MLB.com Cut Forecast. Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast. It's a cast from Cut 4. Here it is.
Hello and welcome to the Cut Forecast. I'm Dakota Gardner. I'm joined, as always, by Gemma Kaneko.
Hello.
And my boss. He deigned to join us this week. He came down from his perch on high, and he said, I will return to the Cut Forecast. That is, of course, Ian K.
It's true. I'm here.
You literally sit on a perch, like a giant bird.
He does.
Perch.
Above us, it's made of gold. But he has come down to join us on this week's Cut 4 cast. Ian, thank you for being here.
People are going to be really confused about the setup of Cut 4 headquarters.
There's a blimp somewhere, also a giant
trapeze. We have satellite offices. There's a lot going on. Speaking of a lot going on. There's a lot of baseball going on, we're not going to start with the baseball. We're going to start with somebody who has actually not played baseball in a long time. That is, of course, our weekly update on Dancing with the Stars of David Ross, who performed a dance number this week that was, honestly, it was like he was trying. It's like this was created specifically for me because it was a Disney-themed night on Dancing with the Stars. Grandpa Rossi and his dance partner, Lindsay Arnold, they danced to a dance that was themed to Cars 3. That was exciting. It was set to ZZ Top's, or I'm sorry, not ZZ Top. I assume that all ZZs are the same. ZZ Ward's Ride, which apparently is in the film. Did you guys watch Grandpa Rossi's dance? Do you have thoughts? Are you happy that he's continuing on?
I'm happy that he's continuing on, but I personally think this was his least interesting dance.
I agree.
Whoa, even though it was specifically for... I don't understand. It's the Disney theme, and you're going to go Cars 3? That's your choice?
Well, so here's... this is part of why I didn't like this, is that Dancing with the Stars airs on ABC, which is owned by Disney, and Cars 3 is coming out soon. And so there's clearly, like, a whole brand synergy thing happening. Mm-hmm.
Just give someone else the Cars 3 one, though. Come on. Yeah. You deserve
wheels
more than...
Wheels within wheels.
Ian, you clearly have takes on this.
Yeah, it was his least shirtless dance, so my least favorite. I was hoping he'd pop the top again.
Fair enough.
Real abs or fake, I'm fine either way, as long as there's abs.
I liked the fake ones. I thought those were good. I thought that was a nice subtle touch that he had.
He should make that his thing just the rest of his life, like wherever he goes, late night shows, weddings, just like rips
shirt.
His shirt off and he's got the fake abs underneath.
An active player should do that.
That would
like
be a
after
good
the game, do like the soccer thing where they trade jerseys, only they have the fake abs underneath. And you can, I'm sure you can get a partnership with some sort of performance clothing company so that you get like that good wickable material. That'd be good.
That would be good.
I love performance clothing.
We know that you love it. Your dream is to just own game used items by other people, right? Isn't
correct
that your thing?
That's correct.
Yeah. So now we all know that. Okay. Does anybody have anything else to say about Dancing with the Stars?
I mean, hopefully there's more shirtlessness next week. That's really the most important.
Yeah, I don't want to harp on this because we talk constantly about Dancing with the Stars. But more shirtlessness. David, take your shirt off. That's the message from Cut 4. But let's talk about actual baseball. If you've read Cut 4 at all in the last year, you would probably know that we are obsessed, and more than the last year, the last couple of years, we are obsessed with Eric Thames, who I always called Eric Thames, but apparently it's Thames because I'm a snob. But he came back from Korea, and everybody was like, I don't know, is he going to mash? Guess what? The answer to that question is a big, emphatic yes. He had a 5 home run streak in a row to start the season, which is the longest in Brewers history. It actually tied Jeremy Burnett's. Didn't think we would talk about him on this podcast. Are you guys in on Eric Thames? Do you think he's for real? Is this like, are we entering a new era of, are we entering the Eric Thames era, I guess is the question.
Wow, whole era. Well, we talked about this a while ago on the podcast, is about, because I think Claire was on and he was talking about the Brewers and how he really wants them to be this amazing team, and we were like, well, they would all have to be either the top, like the very top of our expectations for them, or the very bottom, right? All these players. Mm-hmm. And I think Thames is the one guy who has somehow lived Claire's wildest dream, which he is fulfilling all of the expectations that we had and wanted. I don't even care if he's still doing this in September, because it's really fun right now.
in Claire's wildest dream, Thames would definitely be shirtless.
Fake abs. Fake abs, obviously.
That is true. That is, yes.
Yeah. I've enjoyed this run because it kind of brought me back to a previous era. You could say the Jeremy Burnett's era. It almost felt like the baseball of my youth, the golden age of like squat first baseman standing on the plate and just mashing. You know, it's almost like a little bit of a Mo Vaughn vibe kind of from Thames. And I appreciated that. You know, we're sort of have been back to that high home run baseball for the last year or so. And just watching him hit, you know, dinger after dinger has been cool.
Yeah. Do you think this is going to start, I guess to me, do you think this is going to start like an idea of more players going to other countries to try to sort of rebuild a name for themselves to come back? Because it happens sometimes. I remember like Colby Lewis went to Japan for a while and came back. You hear about it occasionally, but is this something that maybe will happen more often now because it's been such a success story?
Are you just saying that you want Manny to come back? Is that what's happening right
now? I would never. I would never suggest anything like that. What are you talking about? But I just mean, like, if you're the kind of player who, like, especially, like, maybe pitchers who do that weird thing where their arm, they get an injury and then you never hear from them for another year and a half. Like, I don't know, maybe they could try it. I think this is, like, a cool thing.
Yeah, I do sort of wonder, and I'm just thinking this out on the fly, and there's probably another MLB.com podcast that is better to explain it, but like I was reading that some of, you know, it's a very small sample size, but some of the more StatCast indicators can stabilize pretty quickly, and there is some reason to believe that like this, you know, not this level, but like he could be a good hitter going forward, and this isn't just a fluke. And I kind of wonder if the ability to measure some of those things, I mean, there's no StatCast for KBO games or Japanese League games right now, but like, will teams have more cause to scout guys who have gone to other leagues and might want to come back because, you know, they can easier predict the transition back here based on these advanced stats in a way they couldn't before?
That is actually really interesting. I didn't even think about it like that at all. We should get Petriello to come back on and tell us about how StatCast is going to take over the world.
We should do that.
We definitely should. Hold that thought, however.
Oh.
Don't want to spoil anything, but hold that thought. I like the idea of there just being this sort of exchange between the other countries. I think it's cool. Not to harp on soccer, but I know like that happens a lot in soccer where a player will be of high profile in one country, will sort of fall out of favor, they'll go to another country, build their profile back up, go back. Like, I think that the more we can make baseball a part of the global community, I think the better.
Do you think his Korean nickname will find success over here? It's a God.
They just call them God?
Yeah.
I don't think it will find success over here.
What a cool nickname.
That is a very cool nickname.
What if we just, like, people like this, what if we just made it, like, The God? Would the that be God. Better instead of like, just random God?
THA, The God.
Like, yeah.
Like Charlemagne?
Like Charlemagne the God.
Like Charlemagne.
We need to get Charlemagne the God on this show.
We should get him on the show.
I'm sure he'd do it.
Let me just borrow that nickname real quick.
Okay, we'll put a pin in Eric Thames. We will return to him because I imagine this is not the last time we will discuss him on the Cup forecast this season. Hopefully.
Probably not.
I may have just jinxed him. It is the Gardner family
as
way.
As we've discussed, you know, been passed on. You are a witch, so.
I am. And it takes one to know one.
True.
Oh. Speaking of players that Cup 4 is obsessively covers constantly and no matter what they say, something amazing happened, and I feel very privileged to be able to share this with you listening. Yasiel Puig wrote an article for MLB.com. I can't explain. There are a few words. He's a coworker now. He's like, he works with us.
You should email him.
I will email him. I have a couple ideas I want to run by him for a recurring feature that maybe he could run.
See you at the holiday party.
Please let Yasiel Puig come to the holiday party. But he, in this article revealed, and in a video interview with it, he revealed that he... Well, first of all, let me read to you the first line of this article.
This is the first sentence of the article.
This is literally the first sentence. I want to read it to you. I'm Yasiel Puig, outfielder for the Los Angeles Dodgers, but I'm also a father, a son, and a comedian. Look, this is why I love Yasiel Puig, because that is like near the top of the list of ways he identifies is as a comedian. But he continued and he said that he wants to be in a movie and he wants to star in that movie with fellow comedian Kevin Hart. And Gemma, I will let you take this one home. What kind of movie would this be?
A cartoon movie. Obviously. His best friends are minions. How could he not want to be in a cartoon?
Look, I know I'm prone to hyperbole, but I just want to say that there's nothing I've ever wanted more than to see this movie get made. Ian, do you have thought? Are you excited about what kind of cartoon do you think Yasiel Puig and Kevin Hart would star in?
I mean, I think you got to go buddy cop, right?
As a cartoon, though.
Like Zootopia-style buddy cop, like his cartoon.
Hasn't Kevin Hart done a bunch of buddy cop movies, like, in live action? That's his thing, right?
Kevin Hart, I'm pretty sure, has actually been in every movie released for the past 3 years.
So if he goes cartoon, then it's like a new spin on the buddy cop format with him and Puig. I'm not sure who's good cop and who's bad cop in this scenario, but
that is a good question.
Now, would it
question.
Be baseball-themed at all?
No, I don't want Yasiel Puig to play Yasiel Puig.
No, no, no.
I want him to act.
It's a cartoon, right?
He's a comedian.
So I'm thinking again, like, it's in this vein of cartoony stuff. So maybe they're like inanimate objects, like baseball objects that are now like cartoonified and they have to solve a crime.
Okay, I got it.
Okay.
There was a robbery that took place on the baseball field.
Uh-huh.
Yasiel Puig plays a bat.
There you go.
Kevin Hart plays a ball. Can they overcome their differences to solve the crime?
What's it called?
It's called Three Strikes, You're Out.
That is not going to get made. This is weak.
I'll think of something better. L'esprit de l'escalier. I'll have something better
later.
Wow,
you're not even getting into the pitch meeting. They're going to be like, who is this French-speaking nerd?
Well, fine. What movie do you want to see them in?
I like the idea of a buddy cop movie. I think that's really cute. I don't want it to be like people cartoons, though. I want it to be like cute animals, because I think Puig would like that.
Well, Vince Scully always called him the wild horse.
Oh, perfect.
So he could play a horse.
There we go. Could be, yeah, I guess it could be two horses solving
That's weird.
Mysteries. I don't know.
Solving equine mysteries.
What else? Yeah.
What is, I didn't realize, I know Vince Scully called him the wild horse. I didn't realize he had fully embraced that. And like, isn't his foundation called the Wild Horse Foundation?
Yeah.
I did not know that before he wrote this this article for MLB.com, but I like it. I like when guys, you know, they'll take a nickname that, like, it just kind of happened randomly. Like, Vince just said that during a broadcast, and now it's, like, his whole identity.
Yeah, it's cool. Basically, Yasiel Puig and Vince Scully are both perfect in every way. That's my personal position. That's not the editorial position of Cut 4, but I just thought everyone needed to know that.
I feel like it might be the editorial position of Cut 4.
It's pretty close to it.
I think also we're going to need to come up with some Kevin Hart, Yasiel Puig movie pitches.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
We got to do that. That's a good thing.
I think that's
going to
happen.
If you have a Kevin Hart, Yasiel Puig movie pitch, please tweet it at us, at Cut 4 with hashtag Cut4Cast. We will 100% retweet the best ones. So please make sure to do that. But before we move on, you know, earlier I mentioned, Gemma, that Mike Petriello knows a lot of things and that he's a good resource if you want to learn more about the science behind baseball.
Yes, you mentioned that.
I'm going to take credit for everything that you say. But before we go on to the rest of the podcast, I want to take a second to tell you about the StatCast podcast, which is a show dedicated to the analytics that drive front office decisions in the modern game. It is hosted by Mike Petriello and Matt Myers, both of whom I admire greatly. And last week, they talked about the most interesting man in baseball, Yankees rookie outfielder Aaron Judge, and what exit velocity could tell us about his chances of becoming the next Giancarlo Stanton. Spoiler alert, they're pretty good. And you can download that podcast on iTunes or wherever else you get podcasts by searching for StatCast Podcast or by going to StatCastPodcast.com. That is StatCastPodcast.com. The next thing I want to talk to you guys about is, I think, the most important thing that's happened in the last 7 days in the baseball cycle. It's not Eric Thames. We already talked about him. It's not Yasiel Puig writing an article for MLB.com, great though that may be. We already talked about that. I'm talking instead about the Easter Bunny coming out of nowhere in Washington, D.C. to destroy former President Teddy Roosevelt during the president's race. Gemma, yes. Are you team Easter Bunny or are you team Teddy Roosevelt? As like, Cut Four's resident historian.
Well, what I want to know from you guys, because like I was thinking about this, like who would you rather be in that situation? Would you rather be the bunny or would you rather be TR? Like
I'd rather be the bunny.
It's so, but okay, but you know, with all the giant head, there's a lot of extra padding when you hit the ground, and the bunny is just, that's all you got.
But when you're tackling him, you could say something awesome, like, trust bust this! And then
that's why you're not allowed to be the bunny and you have to be TR. I loved that. People that, all my friends kept sending me that, like, all day. People who don't even really watch baseball. Like, did you see how awesome this was? Just fun. Just
it's a
fun
a good thing.
Though, however, as I'm going to make a bad history joke now, they should have had a racing Jimmy Carter. You look it up, the Swamp Rabbit. You guys are lame.
Gemma, would you like to explain?
No, I'm not going to explain it. If I have to, you have to look up the Swamp Rabbit. The time that Jimmy Carter was chased by a rabbit in a swamp.
I just want to say the best part of the Cut Forecast is that it gives you homework. I think that that's really what people
you
come to us.
You have a smartphone probably in your hand right now. Just Google.
They're listening
Swamp
to
Rabbit.
Our podcast. They don't have time to Google Swamp
Rabbit. You can
Rabbit.
Do that at the same time.
Unbelievable. I'm looking out for you. Gemma clearly is trying to give you more work. Ian, do you have any thoughts on the? Are you team bunny? Are you team TR?
Would you rather be the bunny or TR?
I mean, I'm just team shameless violence. I think, well, the funny thing is, like, there's a lot of padding in the head, but there's no padding anywhere else for either. I would rather be the bunny because, like, then I know when the contact is coming. Like, TR, I'm sure they plan this out, but you can't see anything coming out of that mask. That could not have been fun for him, so I'm team bunny.
I sympathize with the bunny as well, but only because one time I met TR and he gave me a thumbs down in the photo that we took together, so...
Wow,
rude.
That's harsh.
Rude
of Little
PR.
Did he know your respect for American history.
I guess I was wearing the opposing team's logo, so I understand.
Unbelievable.
But still.
We're one joke. We're one joke from sending either of you to become the speechwriter for the mute TR.
Wait, I got one. Here we go. I want to be the Easter Bunny so that as I tackle him, I can shout, walk softly and carry a big hit stick. Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on, because I don't like you all glaring at me like that. It makes me uncomfortable. Oh. Did you hear about this on Tuesday night, Jeopardy, America's favorite game show? I don't know if that's true, but I'm deciding that it's true.
Wheel of Fortune probably is, but that's because people are lame.
Well, Jeopardy's Cut Four's favorite game show because a certain individual on the Cut Four cast was actually on Jeopardy, was a contestant. That would be, of course, Gemma.
Yes, I was on Jeopardy.
How'd it go?
Not great.
But
I'm obviously not on my own private island in the Caribbean, so.
Now, that is a sad story, but what's a happy story is that on Tuesday night's episode of Jeopardy, there was a baseball-themed category, which is super cool. It's literally baseball, so not very imaginative. Although the rest of the categories were like, foul and then, you know, grand slam or whatever, and it was, you know, it's Jeopardy, it's all
puns.
Very esoteric
baseball
puns.
Yes.
But I thought what might be fun would be to ask the two of you the questions that were written for Jeopardy in this category. Now, Gem, I know you've seen some of these, so if you know the answer,
I will not cheat.
I mean, they're not all that difficult, so Ian theoretically should do well, but
theoretically
we will find out. All right, so here we go. Here's the first question. In 2016, Cleveland's hopes died as this team won it all for the first time since the year Grover Cleveland died.
What are the Chicago Cubs?
That is correct. Good job.
Good use of the question.
Yes, you formed it in the form of a question. That's good. All right, here's question number two. Babe Ruth was the first to wear number 3 for the Yankees. This man was their first number 4.
Who was Lou Gehrig?
That is correct.
There's a lot of pressure.
Ian, it's your board.
I'll take baseball, Dakota. All right. 600.
Before they were named for their hosiery, this American League team was known simply as the Americans.
What are the Red Sox?
That is correct.
That was close. There were multiple options.
There were. You could have answered Kerry Russell.
Several American League teams.
The Boston Americans. Wow.
All right. In 2012, Miguel Cabrera got on his horse and became the first hitter to win this distinction since 1967.
What is the Triple Crown?
Did you try to pronounce that the way Alex Trebek said it last night?
Maybe. Miguel Cabrera.
Because that is how he said it.
All right, here's the last one. This one's, I think, the hardest.
This is for 1,000.
Also, this is not the hardest. Wins above replacement is a statistic in this field of baseball statistical analysis.
When is sabermetrics?
When is it?
It's a question.
Sure. We'll accept that.
Contestants should get more creative with how they ask the questions. That's just my personal stance.
I think the correct answer to that question is war, what is it good for? I think that's the only acceptable answer to that question. Ian, good job. You got all of them.
Thank you.
That was impressive.
I'm now moving to my Caribbean island.
Oh, how nice for you.
Gemma, you should Google Gemma and
you should not.
YouTube and on
you should not.
And Jeopardy.
Unless
and
you
want to
hear
happening.
A lot of gratuitous, under my breath, not family-friendly words.
A baseball writer from Brooklyn, New York.
Now, to be a little bit more sympathetic to Gemma, because I feel bad for bullying her on this podcast, we allowed her to do something super cool this week. We allowed her to do something super cool this week. You interviewed Rick A. Keel.
I did, yeah. He has a new book that just came out earlier this week called The Phenomenon, and it's about his life and the Yips and what he did after, and it's really good. He was really nice and came on the podcast to talk to me about it.
That's so cool. Let's listen right now.
Today I'm talking to Rick Yankiel, at first a pitcher and later an outfielder for the Cardinals. He also played for the Royals, Braves, Nationals, Astros, and Mets, and is now an analyst at Fox Midwest. Thanks for coming on the show, Rick.
Thanks, and thanks for having me.
Your new book, The Phenomenon, Pressure, the Yips, and the Pitch That Changed My Life, is out on April 18th, which, since we're recording this on Monday, that's tomorrow. This book is amazing. It's really incredible. It's a very serious emotional journey, and I think a lot more straightforward than many sports books are. What was that like to relive it when you were writing it?
It was really interesting. A lot of the memories I have from, even the childhood and moving into throwing stuff just really weren't that pleasant. So, for a long time, I never went back and revisited those. And it almost feels like another life. But to go all the way back and start at the beginning of your childhood and just kind of, I feel like we all create this image of who we think we were at those ages, and then to go back and talk to the people that were in your lives and hear what they have to say about it, and just moving through it to understand everything I went through personally, professionally, and then to know where I am today, it's something that I'm very proud of.
Yeah, you talk a lot in the book about when you were younger, you thought there was a life that you were that was waiting for you. It was just there, but the life you had was a very different thing altogether. What was the moment for you that you stopped kind of looking for this life that you thought was there and started living the life you were actually living?
I think a lot of it is a lot in the pitching stuff where I just felt like I was going to be this, or I wanted to be this Hall of Fame pitcher. And certainly the talent was there. And it felt like day after day I was accomplishing the goals I need to accomplish to get there. And I was getting better each day and learning in the big leagues. And I felt like that was the life I deserved, that I had worked for and I had gotten through and got out of that house and all the hard work that I had put into becoming that guy and being that person. And then to go through the throwing stuff, the yips, and have it all taken away in an instant and nobody be able to explain it to you why or really what's happening. I mean, it was scary. It was frightening. And then instead of being able to live that life, I had to recreate another one, which was to become an outfielder. And I made it back to the big league successfully and played 8 more years. And that's a lot of what I talk about that I'm proud of. It's hard enough to make it to the big league once, but I get to run around and say, hey, I made it twice. So it's something that I'm very proud of.
Yeah, it's a really incredible story, and I think it has just a great deal of fortitude that you showed in your life of being able to overcome those things. When you talk about the yips, you talk about it as this monster, a thing that just won't ever leave you alone. It's a fight that you're constantly having. You relive it in the book a little bit, and I don't want to make you go into it too much, but what was it? What did it feel like that night? When suddenly this thing you had done for your entire life just wasn't something you knew how to do anymore?
I was so young when it happened in that first playoff game back in 2000, and really I didn't even understand what was happening. And I remember doing the interview after the game and just saying, hey, it was a mechanical flaw and it'll never happen again and blah, blah, blah. And really I had no idea even what was happening. I didn't understand the magnitude, nor did I understand what the next 5 years of my life was going to look like. In a lot of ways I thought, this is just going to be something I put behind me and I'm going to move past it and be the same guy tomorrow and my next start and whatever. And even in my bullpen session in between the first start and the second start of the 2000 playoffs, I was lights out. And then I went out for that second game and the same thing happened. All of a sudden I was doing okay. And then just started launching balls off the backstop and not being able to throw it where I wanted to. The thing is that, a lot of people who've been through, nobody wants to talk about it and you can't find literature on it. And, we call it the yips or we call it the monster. And that's the thing. There's not even a real name for it. Nobody has one yet. And even with all the science that we have today, it seems like we can all try to guess on how to treat it, but nobody still really understands exactly what it is.
Yet you say even in the book that nobody talked about fear, and at least nobody that you respected talked about it, or this anxiety, this feeling that maybe is more common than we realize. So what helped you find your own ability to talk about it? Because this has happened to many players that we remember, but I feel like your account of it is just so clear and straightforward in a way that I haven't really encountered before. So how did you get to that place?
As I mentioned, it just seems like nobody wants to talk about it. And I understand it because it's dark, it's ugly, it's embarrassing. There's all these emotions that come with it. But, the fact that I made it to the other side of it and I came back and pitched in 04 and then I came back and played as an outfielder, I realized that I can help people because I was that guy looking for help and reaching out, trying to figure out how to beat this and get through it. And it's tough. And that's the thing. You always hear guys talk about a physical injury, whether they hurt their elbow or they tear their knee, and they can go talk to 10 other guys who've had that same injury, and most of them will say, hey, don't worry, just hang in there. You'll come back stronger. And they always talk about how hard that grind is. Well, then imagine this mental injury where nobody wants to talk about it. You don't know if you're ever going to get back or ever going to be the guy that you were, let alone be back in the big leagues. And that's a scary thing. So understanding that and understanding that it's not just in baseball. There's NFL kickers and dart throwers and writers and announcers. I've gotten letters from all walks of life of people who are saying, hey, look, I've been through this, or this is me, that was me, and thank you so much for sharing your story. So understanding that and understanding that you can help other people and help them feel that they're not alone and they're not the only one that's going through this or that have been through this was where I understood, that this book is going to have purpose and it needs to be written.
Yeah, I think it fills a space that is really necessary. And you say there's a part in the book where you decide you're retiring from baseball, you're a young man, you're retiring, and you describe this sense of relief, like just collapsing into the couch and just being like, I can do whatever I want now. I can do anything. And that baseball had been part of your life for so long, and suddenly in your head, spoiler alert, everybody knows, but immediately after you decided to come back as an outfielder. But for that moment, that time, what advice do you have to other people who may be in that situation who think, okay, I've had this thing guide my life for so long and now it's not there? What do they do?
For me, and maybe this is a the same for them, I identified myself with baseball. I felt like baseball was what made me who I am, instead of I'm Rick Ankiel and baseball is what I do. And that was so hard, because then when when I lost the pitching and the control and whatever, I felt like I was losing my life, and I wasn't, but it felt like that. And that's the hardest thing to overcome as a young player. It's almost like you identify with whatever you do, that this is what makes you who you are. My advice is to understand who you are, and that's not who you are, it's just what you do. And I remember that day that I did retire from pitching, I felt like by giving back the only life I had ever had, baseball, I was actually getting my life back. And it was, it was one of those moments where as soon as it happened, as soon as I walked into Tony Lewis's office and we had that conversation, and I just, the conversation, hey, this isn't healthy, I can't do it anymore, I won't do it anymore. On the drive home, immediately I felt a tremendous relief. So it was, I immediately knew I made the right decision.
Yeah. I think a lot of, to me, reading your book, a lot of the decisions were like making decisions for you suddenly, just like for what you wanted to do. And how did you know that what you wanted to do was to come back as a position player?
I didn't at first. So I, you know, the hardest thing for me was even to go in and say that I wasn't going to be a pitcher anymore. You know, that took everything I had to do that. I mean, in some ways I felt like I was letting the organization down and letting your team down and not being able to live out my dreams. But at the same time, I understood the road I was on and you know, it wasn't healthy and trying to look forward at the time to what is this going to look like, you know, 5 years down the road, 8 years down the road. You know, I just understood that I needed to go a different direction. So here I am at home, and my agent calls Scott Boras, and I'm talking to a few different people here and there, and he's like, "Hey, are you ready to go play again?" And I remember thinking, like, "What are you talking about? Is nobody listening to me? I just retired. Like, I'm done with baseball." He's like, "No, as an outfielder." I'm like, "What? What are you talking about?" So he's like, "Would you want to be an outfielder?" So I hang up. I'm like, "I got to think about this." I hang up. Couple hours go by, I'm trying to let it soak in and envision what this is going to be and visualize what this is going to look like. And you know, that, like I said, as soon as I decided to stop pitching, that weight felt like it got lifted off my chest and I could breathe again and off my shoulders. And I got excited and understood, man, this is going to be fun. I have nothing to lose. You know, back then organizations really, you know, typically didn't give people that chance. So it was kind of a crazy notion at that, but you know, the fact that I could show up and be excited and start to have fun again and joke around and be this happy-go-lucky guy, which I normally was exciting. And then off I went, and then here we are.
Yeah, you talk about going back to the minors and just an atmosphere that was totally different for you than when you asked to be sent down as a pitcher. How did you feel? I mean, like maybe a little bit older than some of the guys. You obviously had been up there in the big leagues. So what did it feel like to come back to the minors as a hitter?
Yeah, it was definitely kind of bizarre. I mean, here you are at the top of the top playing with the cream of the crop. You know, you're in the big leagues. It doesn't get any better or any higher than that. And then all of a sudden I'm down in rookie ball, you know, relearning how to be an outfielder and how to be a hitter. You know, it was, you know, I think it was a grind, but it was nothing like a grind like it was when I was pitching. And I had to wake up every day and do everything that I needed to do to get ready to compete and be able to throw strikes. So it almost made it easier, I guess, so to speak, from a mental aspect, because nothing was going to be as hard as the pitching was. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just tried to give back and try to teach those young guys what I've learned about the big leagues. And, you know, when I started having success pretty quickly, and it was, you know, it was fun. I was enjoying myself. I was having fun again.
That's the most important thing. Did you make any friends in the minors that, you know, you later saw come back in the big leagues?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, first year I was in A-ball, then Double-A, Triple-A, and a lot of those guys, not a lot, but I mean, some of them did make it to the big leagues. And you know, it's exciting to watch somebody else's dreams come true. You know, everybody out there has the same goal, and that's to get to the big leagues and stay there as long as possible, be the best you can be. So to watch their dreams unfold in front of them and to be able to be a part of it is a special thing.
When you finally made it back as a hitter, the scene in the book is really emotional. It's very dramatic, but you later talk about some of your great throws that you made. But I wonder what it was like in your first big league game when you had to make a throw from the outfield. How did you feel?
I felt like I was going to throw them out. You know, I think the interesting thing is that I was more accurate from 300 feet than I was 66 inches. And once I got out past 100 feet or so, you know, I could trust where the ball was going to go again. It's a bizarre thing. And I think, you know, that's kind of why the book name stands out as the phenomenon, because it's just such a bizarre thing. And that was what was fun again, too. I mean, here I am where my arm almost ran me out of the game, and now that I'm an outfielder, it's a weapon again, and it's helping me stay there and win big league games. So I understood that. I worked on it day in and day out, just on being able to, you know, working on my footwork, working on throwing guys out, understanding angles. And it became a weapon again. So it was fun. So even when I first got back, it was, you know, there was a part of me when the ball was hit to me that I was thinking to myself, please run. I hope you go so I have a chance to throw you out.
Yeah, I remember those don't run on Rick shirts. I remember those, seeing a lot of those.
That's
around.
Right. I remember those too. Those were fun.
Yeah. So people, there were always people around you that were helping you figure out whatever step you were at. You talk about how Jim Edmonds helped you as a hitter a lot. And Daryl Kyle was there for you as a pitcher. Is there anybody else in your life, in your major league journey, that really stood out to you as a mentor figure?
You know, there's so many people. It's hard to just, you know, pull out certain people. You know, I remember in AAA as a hitter, you know, Rick Eckstein was really instrumental, and he was our hitting coach there and helping me just in, you know, my biggest thing was I felt like I was playing catch up. So I was there early and I would stay late, and he was there with me every step of the way. I mean, he had as much passion as I had about it. There was never a time where he was like, hey, you know, I'm really tired. I need to get home. He grinded it out with me and just talking everything, hitting from positions to what pitchers are going to try to do to me, how they're going to try to get me out, how we think they're going to attack me once I get to the big leagues, all those things. Other than that, I mean, there was a lot of people along the way, and I'm thankful that I was surrounded by good people to help me every step of the way.
You, in your book, write about a sports psychologist, Harvey Dorfman, who was a big part of your life, was very important to you and helped you through a lot of tough times. One of our questions from Twitter from Ben Cosman is, do you think that mental fitness is as emphasized as it should be by the league, and are more players in this place than fans are necessarily aware of? Are more players looking maybe for someone like Harvey in their lives?
Well, one thing I can say is that back then it was, you know, sports psychology was still kind of taboo. And I will say I feel like in today's day and age it's becoming more accepted. And I think that teams and players alike, you know, fans, everybody, I think everybody's starting to understand that how important it can be. For a long time, nobody wanted to look at that. And now I think everybody understands it can help, which is great. And one thing, too, is, you know, it seems like there's such a stigma among men that, you know, nobody wants to admit that they need help and they don't want to go get it. And, you know, I would say the exact opposite. Like it's not a shot against your ego to go get help. Everybody can benefit from it. And certainly Harvey Dorfman, without him, I would have never got to where I got. And I owe him a lot. That's for sure.
I mean, definitely. I think that it's rare for players to speak about their anxieties that they're feeling. There's a moment, a passage in your book when you say, like, I had to ask myself, do I open the door with my left hand or my right? Like, how do I pick up my keys? And that is so relatable to anyone who's ever had a panic attack or felt anxiety or even in their lives, like beyond baseball. So just being able to speak about that in an atmosphere that generally does not have that kind of language, I think is really important. And you were able to do that for a little while as the Nationals life skills coordinator, and you talked players through this. Is there anything about that experience that stood out to you talking to other players who had maybe felt these kinds of anxieties?
You just start to, you recognize and see the same, you can understand the fears they're going through. I mean, especially all the young players, a lot of these guys are coming from high school or college where they dominated where they were. And now they're stepping into an arena where everybody's as of equal talent. And sometimes that can be a shock and they're not used to not be going out there and being successful. So now all of a sudden they're playing against guys that are as good as they are or better. And sometimes a lot, you know, those seasons, their young professional careers as the season starts, doesn't start off like they expected. And that's when fears and doubts start to creep in and it can be overwhelming for them because they've never had failure at any level of baseball. Now all of a sudden, you know, they're in there in that ring there's definitely a need for it. You can see it. I enjoyed it. I loved being around the young guys. And it was fun. It was fun.
That's good. I mean, seems like you got to go out and eat some good pancakes, which is important. All right. We're going to take a couple of questions from Twitter. So a lot of Braves fans jumping in. Many of these Braves fans wanted to say how memorable your postseason home runs were, and they wanted to thank you. But some more direct questions. We have one from @MattBaby4. If you had a chance to go back and start your career as an outfielder instead of a pitcher, would you?
No, I wouldn't, because when I was in high school, I was a smaller kid, and then my sophomore year, I grew, and I went from throwing 84 to 94. And it became clear that that was going to be my fastest route to the big league. So, you know, as a pitcher, I think my talent was, you know, I had a generational arm. I think my talent was above and beyond. I had a chance to be one of the best that there was. As a hitter, I was good, but I wasn't that good. And I don't know if it would have turned into that if I would have started hitting, you know, earlier instead of pitching. But, you know, no, because at the time, you know, you have to take all the information you have around you and make the best decision you can. And at the time, I mean, as hard as I was throwing, as good as my curveball was at that young age, and I was only learning and getting better, I would still choose the same thing.
Now our next question is from @EddieGChiTown. Who is the toughest lefty and the toughest righty that you faced as a hitter?
Okay, so the toughest lefty was this guy named Brian Schaus. He was a reliever for the Milwaukee Brewers. And he threw about 80. It was below the hitting speed. I mean, it was in the low 80s, but not, including myself, nobody on our team could get a hit off this guy. It became kind of a laughing joke. Like, if somebody can just put it in play, we'll give you $100. It was crazy. We just couldn't hit him. And, you know, they were in our division when I was with the Cardinals, and this guy would come in and just dominate us. It didn't matter. Guy on first, guy on second, bases loaded. He just seemed to have everybody's number. As far as right-handers go, Chad Billingsley, he kind of threw this four-seamer that kind of acted like a rise ball. And being a lefty hitter, I like pitches down in the ball, or I like pitchers that threw sinkers. So any right-handers that threw a straight four-seamer that had a little rise in it, that was not my game. So there was more than a few of those. I remember Josh Johnson. I thought he was really, really nasty when he was healthy. So, I mean, just those guys who threw that rise ball was not the person I wanted to face.
That, I mean, I love this idea that just, like, nobody could get hit off this left-hander.
Oh, it was amazing.
Did you ever get a hit off him? Do you remember?
Yeah. Like a couple spring trainings later, I got a hit. And even though it was only spring training, it was the biggest victory ever for me personally. I'm like, yes, I got a hit off him. I'm back.
Did you get $100?
No, because it was spring training.
All right. Our next question is from @UNC23 DeBulls. Would you rather strike someone out for the win or throw someone out at home from the outfield?
Throw someone out at home.
That would be amazingly impressive. That would just be totally incredible.
Yeah. I'd much rather throw somebody out at home.
Sort of in that similar line, what play is harder to make, a liner straight at you in center or covering first base on a grounder to first?
The liner straight at you, because you know, a lot of times you don't know if it's going to land in front of you or behind you, and you kind of get stuck in the middle, and that's when you can get in trouble.
That was probably, like, just a completely different skill set, too, I would imagine, like, how to keep an eye on the ball.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, too, that I always, you know, when you're in the outfield, you're the last line of defense. So if the ball gets by you, when you turn around and go get it, the only thing that people see is your name and your number running to go get it, and you're the guy who missed it. Covering at first, at least, I mean, it might be a one base error, but most likely somebody's going to be there to get it quickly and the runners can't get too far.
We've been seeing lately, actually, over the past couple of games, we've been seeing, even in last night's Cardinals games, fans reaching out. As an outfielder, how did you feel about, like, fans maybe trying to catch balls that were borderline home runs?
It bothered me if I was close enough to rob it and I thought I had a chance to get it and somehow we got, you know, we tangled up or hit gloves or hands, or sometimes you run into a bucket of popcorn. Who knows what's going to be out there. Other than that, I understand. I mean, I understand the fans' perspective. They're out there. They're excited. They're at a game. The ball's coming to them. They got their glove. It's hard for them to hold back and try not to make the play. Last night, I thought that was a home run. I'm surprised that didn't get overturned.
Yeah, I thought that was a home run, too. Maybe they just didn't have enough to overturn it or something. It was kind of confusing to me. But
yeah. That was interesting.
You still root for the Cardinals?
Of course.
Are they your team? You have two sons now, and you say you put Cardinals hats on them. Is that going to be their team too?
I hope so. You know, I try to explain to them the history and, you know, everything that comes with being a Cardinal fan and how, you know, they're beloved in St. Louis and everything about it. I grew up in Florida, so one of the things that when I got to St. Louis that really blew me away was the tradition, because everybody's a St. Louis fan, your neighbor and their neighbor and their neighbor and whatever. So it's almost like the city shuts down if there's a game and you know, everybody's on the same page. Well, down here in Florida, everybody's from somewhere else, right? So I got one neighbor that's from New York, the other neighbor's from Connecticut, the other neighbor's from California. So we don't have that tradition. Not everybody's on the same page and rooting for the same thing. So that just really, it really blew me away and made me fall in love with the city and the team.
Now, I mean, you were a Braves fan in your childhood, yeah?
I was.
And you got a chance to play for the Braves, had a historic Braves postseason moment, got to play for Bobby Cox. Who are some of your favorite managers that you got to play with?
Well, Tony La Russa, Bobby Cox. I mean, those are my two favorites that I played for, both Hall of Famers. You know, Bobby Cox, that was one of those just aha moments in my life. I grew up a huge Braves fan. I mean, in our house, it was dinner, and the Braves were on TV. That's just, you know, that was just my world when I was young. So in 2010, that was going to be his last year managing. So when I got traded over there at the deadline, I felt like the baseball heavens had opened up and put me there on purpose. And to be able to put that uniform on and then hit that home run in the playoffs for Bobby Cox and the Braves, as I remembered him, was just a magical and amazing moment and something that I'll never forget.
That just is a beautiful moment in the book as well. Everyone should read the book. It's called The Phenomenon, Pressure, The Yips, and The Pitch That Changed My Life. It's out on April 18th. You can get it on Amazon, at bookstores, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. It's great. One more question before we let you go today, Rick, is that in the book you say you started reading, and since we're talking about books, I thought I'd ask, what is your favorite book?
I have a bunch. I love the Jack Reacher series by Lee Child. I mean, there's so many, it's hard for me to put a finger on one. But I it's funny because I didn't read my first book till I was like 20. And then I just got thirsty for knowledge and just became I read everything across the board. And, still today, you know, I try to make sure I'm reading something at least once a week. And, I can't say that there's so many. I mean, there's been different parts of my life where one was a favorite and then I move on to something else. One that I read recently that was really, really, I'd say is my favorite book that I've read in a few years was the book Fearless. And it's about a Navy SEAL, Adam Brown. I thought that was one of the more phenomenal stories that I've read in a long time. I'd recommend it to anybody. I mean, these Navy SEAL guys are just the baddest dudes on the planet. And this guy's story is remarkable.
We're going to tell our listeners to hit you up on Twitter for book club recommendations.
All right, send me some recommendations. I'm always looking.
You're on Twitter at THEE, Rick Ankiel?
Yes.
And your book, again, The Phenomenon, Pressure, The Yips and the Pitch That Changed My Life. Everyone read it. Rick, thank you so, so much for joining us today.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Rick Ankiel for stopping by the Cup Forecast. That was super cool.
Yeah, it was great. If you have, you know, your book recommendations, like you said, just tweet it at him, all the books that you guys like. He likes to read. He wants to read more books now.
He's just really thoughtful, and I don't know. It's cool when you hear people who are that open and honest.
Yeah.
And
Been through a lot, so.
Yeah, but thanks again, for sure. It is now time to summarize the podcast into 140 characters. One tweet that accurately and adequately condenses our podcast into one bite-sized chunk. Ian, you must go first. What have you got?
I'm like, we should note, I haven't been able to form a full sentence the last like three times I've done this in the podcast.
That's okay. I did terribly last. It was either last week or the week before I did horribly. So, low bar.
Yeah. Can't wait for the climactic moment of the Kevin Hart, Yasiel Puig buddy cop comedy, in which Puig reveals his fake abs.
Weird. That was a weird tweet.
Puig's also like one of the few baseball players that doesn't need fake abs.
Yeah, that dude is jacked. That was weird. I'm going to hide you.
It is a tweet.
That was a tweet. What a tweet from Ian. Gemma.
Retweeted by Michael Flair.
Only if you had art to go with it. Gemma, what is your tweet? Actually, you know what? I'm going to let you go last.
Oh,
because
wow,
I was
okay.
Mean to you earlier.
Oh, you just have
and
really
said that we
luck?
Allowed you to interview Rick Ankiel. I will go now.
All right.
I don't have a good one.
All right.
Hey, at David Ross. I don't know what his handle is. Grandpa Rossi?
I probably. No, I don't know.
Do you want to go see hashtag three strikes you're out with me? Question mark.
He replies no.
Eric at Eric Thames can come too. Hashtag I'm sorry I mispronounced your name.
What an invitation.
That was terrible. All right, Gemma, play us out with your tweet.
Okay, well, it's also going to be bad, and it's also going to be about the cartoon movie, so here we go. Looking forward to David Ross's dancing cameo in the Yasiel Puig Kevin Hart vehicle, Battery Mates, tagline, Wild Horses Couldn't Drag Them Away.
Oh! Ian, we just got dunked on. That was really bad. We just got humiliated on this podcast.
I was trying to come up with a tagline for the last 20 minutes and couldn't do it.
Wow. Okay, so first of all, everybody retweet Gemma's because that was amazing. But if you have a better and more accurate tweet that summarizes our podcast, I don't think you do this week, please tweet it at us at Cut4 with hashtag Cut4Cast. We'll retweet the best ones. If you're like Ian and it's weird, then we'll mute you. But other than that, you're good to go. If you go to MLB.com/cut4, you can read all of the articles we talked about on this post. This is a podcast. You can read all the articles that we talked about on this podcast. You can also read all of the other posts that we didn't have a chance to talk about that are all awesome. If you go to Facebook.com/cut4, you can like us and we will appear in your newsfeed when Mark Zuckerberg says we are allowed to. If you follow us on Twitter at Cut4, then we'll have some fun back and forth. That's what Twitter's all about. You can also email us cut4cast@mlb.com. That's cut4cast@mlb.com. Any of your questions, comments, queries, moral quandaries. Maybe you don't know what room to paint your house and you or what room, what color to paint a room in your house. And we could say, hey, you should paint it the colors of the Colorado Rockies because those are beautiful. Any questions you have for us, cut4cast@mlb.com. Also, this is a podcast, despite me saying it was a post earlier. And if you go to iTunes, you can subscribe to this podcast. You can leave us a review, 1 to 5 stars. And if you actually take time to write the review, that helps other people find the podcast as well. So, Gemma, thank you as always for being here.
Of course.
Ian, thank you for coming off your throne and coming down and joining us on the podcast.
Anytime I can join the #1 baseball/home improvement podcast out there, how could I pass up the opportunity?
But mostly, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.